everybody. Welcome to Season 2 of Great Minds, People and Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Chief People Officer of Advertising Week and Emerald. Today's guest is Lisette Arsuaga, co-founder of DMI Consulting and a leader in multicultural marketing. Lisette has guided top brands like McDonald's, P&G, Dunkin', and Marriott on inclusive strategies. She's also a co-founder of AIM, the Alliance for Inclusive and Multicultural Marketing, an alliance of 230-plus organizations advancing equity in media and marketing. Lisette is the co-architect and partner of the Cultural Inclusion Accelerator, which helps brands measure and grow their impact. Hi, Lisette. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Lisette, what inspired you to co-found AIM? And can you share the journey that led you to this pivotal moment in your career?
So I founded my company, DMI Consulting, 15 years ago, where we provide consulting services to corporate clients looking to prioritize diverse segments. And for the first 8 years of the company's existence, we were working with a lot of big clients, smaller clients, and what we learned was that the impact that we were having was pretty amazing when these companies prioritized diverse segments. But when new leadership came into these companies, many times those leaders didn't necessarily believe in the prioritization of diverse segments as one of their top priorities, and they would stop doing this. And the efforts that we had put forth started going backwards. So we soon realized that we weren't going to be able to have a long-lasting impact with individual clients unless we did something at the industry level and affected the industry in a positive way, moving it forward in a more inclusive way. At that time, it was when total market was the word used for inclusivity, which was basically as good as putting a brown face or a black face on an ad. And that was, you know, total market. There was no culture considered. There was no insights considered. So we realized that we needed to do something in the industry that was bringing together the biggest minds and the biggest companies committed to inclusivity so that we would move the industry forward. And then the work that we would do with individual clients could follow that industry direction. So that's when about 8 years ago, we founded AIM. With 36 members at the time who had a history of prioritizing segments. And right now we have about 240 members that make up the organization. So we've grown over 200 members since then.
That's incredible. All in 8 years. That's amazing. And what is AIM's role in providing guidance, data, insight to all of its members?
So we do a little bit of everything. We have different efforts, which, you know, some focus on data and measurements because we want to prove without any doubt that the prioritization of diverse segments lead to the maximization of business growth. So we have data and research that certainly proves that. We also have developed the heart of AIM, not only the mind of AIM. And with that is our call to action under the umbrella of hashtag See All, which we launched in 2017 with the understanding that we need to see each in order to see all. And that means not excluding any segments because of their ability, culture, identity, age, gender, and so on. So the fair representation of all of these segments is under the umbrella of the work that we do for See All. And then we also have educational resources on the AIM Hub. We have more than 200 educational resources to make sure that every marketer becomes abreast at how to target diverse segments, which is basically learning how to target the new face of this country and not only a white non-Hispanic majority.
So do your clients typically come to you once they've set their D&IB goals, essentially? Is that the next step?
So we do inclusive marketing and also the DEIB. And the reason why those are interrelated is because we've learned that in order to have cultural insights and cues embedded into creative executions, you have to have the right people in the room. You have to have those individuals and segments represented so that they can share those insights, because it's very difficult to be able to have those insights if you're not part of those specific communities. So we are very much in tune with the internal inclusion of segments and representation of segments in order to be able to have external outputs that fairly represent segments and accurately represent those segments in a way that segments are going to feel empowered, well-represented, and not stereotyped at any point.
That's great. So you encourage, obviously, all of your clients to have the right people in the room to decide what the outcome of the marketing or the advertising should look like, and that is representative of the audience that they want to reach.
That's exactly right. And when we're looking at inclusion of different segments, we're not only looking at it within the creative execution. It has to be from inception of strategies. It has to be inception of and consideration of budgets. It has to be all of these elements have to be considered and have individuals who understand where to allocate dollars, how to strategize and be inclusive of segments and not have that be an afterthought with remaining dollars. Because when that happens, it's not necessarily always an organic creation and an organic process. And because customers and consumers are very smart today and understand when companies are being organic and true to their values as a company, or if it's forced in order to reach a segment that maybe they haven't necessarily targeted or prioritized in the past.
You talked about this a little bit in the opening. How can marketers achieve cultural authenticity in ads and programs so that it doesn't look like they're just checking a box or doing the quote-unquote right thing?
That's an interesting question, because in 2017, when we launched The All, we also put forth a survey to over 200 companies that answered, and we asked them how many of them were actually targeting diverse segments, had directed efforts towards diverse segments. And when they said, oh, we're targeting these segments, the overwhelming majority of marketers said, oh, yes, of course, we are targeting, every segment. But when we said, do you have specific efforts, specific dollars allocated to reaching these segments and cultural insights that lead you to understand that you are effectively reaching these segments, only 16% of them said yes. So we realized that there was a disconnect between the perception of what brands were doing and the actuality of what they were doing right. So that's when we created the Cultural Insights Impact Measure, which is part of a launch of a measurement that tests the impact of culture in both ads and programs. And it's a measurement that tests 7 different segments, over 350 persons included in the testing of every single spot that we test, so that we can provide individual scores for white, non-Hispanic, general market, bicultural Hispanics, in-language efforts, Black, Asian, LGBTQ, people with disabilities, indigenous populations, and so on, with individual scores for each one of these segments, so that brands can understand how well they're representing each segment, how they're reaching its segment, what the perception of inclusion for each segment is for these spots, and they can understand all of this before that ad goes to market. At a time right now when brands want to make sure that they're getting it right, because the consequences of a pushback are greater than we've ever seen before, it's important for brands to test these messages and make sure that they're getting it right. And the SIM measure does just that, like no other measurement right now in the industry.
Can you share some examples where cultural authenticity made a measurable impact on a marketing campaign that you all helped with?
So we've tested over 850 brands with SIM and conducted more than 1.5 million ad evaluations. So the measurement is proven for sure. And what we know is that the ads that are in the top quartile, so the top 25% of the ads tested versus the ones in the lower quartile, have 10 times the purchase intent. And the numbers are actually quite incredible when it comes to the representation, the values, how these the empowerment of individuals for each one of these segments. And the KPIs are pretty strong when it comes to understanding not only purchase intent, but also loyalty to a brand and that brand perception. So testing the ad is going to get immeasurable results. And as brands have tested more and more ads with Sim and gotten it right more and more likely every single time they test an ad, they can move from the bottom quartile to the top quartile. And the impact is actually quite amazing when it comes to what I said, you know, exactly as part of loyalty and purchase intent and other measures as well.
And what does that testing look like? What are you all testing and what does it look like in action? How do you test the outcome?
So basically, every ad is tested by a minimum of 350 persons. This is not AI. These are actually customers and consumers that are providing their views on the ad. So it's actually, it's the only people's choice and people's values when it comes to any testing of ads today, because you have testing that is industry wide, but not of customers and consumers per se. So we put these surveys out into the marketplace, have every ad tested by 350 persons, and that 350 person number is divided up by segment based on census results, weight heavily. If a brand wants to know better, well, how do Hispanics feel about this? Then we can augment that segment as well. But we provide individual scores for each one of these segments because every one of them is represented fairly and accurately with at least 85 to 115 persons within each one of those segments, because there's obviously an overlay when it comes to LGBTQ or people with disabilities, even Afro-Latinos, you can have an overlay in that and so on.
Thank you for taking us through that. And how do you help your members recognize and leverage the power of this metrics-driven marketing practice?
Well, I mean, we have prioritized A members and A and A members when it comes to the segments. And every year we're conducting the Best in Culture study where we give an award to that company that is Best in Culture in 9 different categories. So at a time when we hear in the news what brands are doing wrong and how they're stepping away from inclusion, our method is completely different. We want to highlight those that are getting it right and that are moving forward with inclusivity as a priority, and also highlighting the fact that, like for this year, for example, this year, Home Depot won in 3 different categories. You don't necessarily have to select one segment in order to win with one. You can win with more than one segment and get it right in more than one way.
And in your experience, are there industries that you feel are left behind in this? I think I read this a while back that despite its being predominantly female consumer base, there are significant gender disparities in leadership roles in the cosmetic industry, for example. Are there other industries where you feel like the gap is really large between their audience and what they're doing?
There are certainly industries that are further behind than others. Insurance and pharmaceutical is probably one of the ones that's not as far ahead as some of the industries like CPG or auto, which seem to be further ahead and have a longer history of the prioritization of diverse segments. That said, in the last couple of years, it does seem that the industries that I mentioned that are further behind have realized that in order to grow, they do have to prioritize these segments. So we've seen a re-energized focus on diverse segments, and we're hoping that that doesn't stop as we witness the pushback against inclusion.
And what are some of the challenges AIM addresses when it comes to equity in investment and data?
Equity and investment is something that we have been very keen on, because the investment in diverse media, whether it's endemic media, which is not owned but targeted, or whether it's owned and targeted media specifically, is nowhere near where it needs to be. specifically when it comes to investment in diverse, owned, and targeted, that investment is about 2% of all media investment in this space right now, which means that 98% of media today is spent elsewhere. When it comes to diverse owned but not targeted, that measurement is that number is closer to 3%, 2.8% of media is diverse owned. So again, what does that mean? That 97% of all media is allocated to white non-Hispanic ownership, which when you think about population and when you think about equity, that's nowhere near where we need to be. So 2.5 years ago, we created the Diverse Media Growth Fronts in New York City. We are now in the midst of planning the third annual Media Growth Fronts, where we feature diverse media and bring together media planners, media buyers together with these diverse media platforms in order to address that inequity that exists. So we not only have presentations on what's going on in the industry, how do we need to move forward, what are best class examples, how do you understand the diverse segments and how are they different and alike one from the other, but we also have one-on-one meetings that we arrange between these diverse media entities and these media buyers and planners so that they can get to know each other better and increase the likelihood that those planning and that buying is inclusive of those segments. This year, we within a 2-year span of time for the growth fronts, we held over 1,200 meetings between these two entities. For 2025, we have planned to have over 2,000 meetings take place within 2 days, and we're increasing the number of media entities featured to 125, and increasing the number of media planners and buyers who attend the event, so that we can indeed have those 2,000 meetings take place within a 2-day period. Granted, not all that buying and planning takes place within those 2 days, but it allows those planners and buyers to be more aware of new platforms that it can increase their ability to reach in culture and in language or in culture alone these segments and be able to augment the number of platforms and the considerations that they have with their media buying and media planning efforts for that year.
That's wonderful, and that's a lot of value add. And perhaps this is the question I should have started with. What does membership with AIM look like? How does a person, an agency, how does an agency apply to be a member and get accepted? Can you walk us through that process a little bit?
Sure. So AIM membership is by invitation only. So we do an interview with any company. We have about 45% of all members are client-side marketers, and the other 55% is divided between agencies, media companies, research companies, trade associations, and nonprofits. We have all segments represented, including Black, Hispanic, aging, LGBTQ, Asian, people with disabilities, indigenous groups, and others. So all of those segments are represented, and regardless of size of the company, everybody has an equal voice. Companies are given 3 seats to attend 3 meetings in person throughout the year. All meetings are also held virtually. So every single member of a marketing team can log in and be part and witness the meetings that are taking place so that they can become more abreast at targeting all of these segments and can become, in essence, better marketers. So we interview these entities, and depending on the space that we have for the representation of segments, but also the type of industry that they are in, we invite them to join, and it's on a year-by-year basis. All client-side marketers pay the same fee to be members, regardless of size, but agencies and media companies pay different prices depending on the size. We also have a sponsorship element for those smaller media entities that are attending the growth fronts, so that they can not only attend the growth fronts for those 2 days, but also attend our meetings throughout the year and have a seat and a voice at the table so that we can, again, minimize the inequity that exists in that space specifically.
That's wonderful. And I assume you're essentially building a community who can also then become sub-communities within themselves and do thought sharing and leadership collaboration that way? Are you seeing that happening as well?
AIM is definitely a village. It's definitely a community. We have events and meetings that take place every month, even though those three in-person meetings are for the entire membership. We have smaller groups where folks decide what they want to focus on as far as their effort, whether it's data and research, whether that is the communications under that See Y'all call to action umbrella, whether that's marketing and the resource that are more educational or AI specifically now with such a great effort on AI. So we make sure that the mistakes that we have made, for example, in digital and other efforts, we don't make again as we're building that AI model and platform. So these are all the efforts where folks collaborate and work together on a day-by-day, week-by-week, and month-by-month effort. So our work is not relegated to one meeting where people go there, listen to what they have to say, and then go back to their job where they can easily forget those learnings and just focus on what they know best. Our efforts are consistent so that we can indeed move the needle forward, not only for AIM members, but the industry at large.
You mentioned AI, and I want to ask what your point of view is in whether or not AI is going to be helpful for multicultural marketing or any inclusivity efforts that a company has, or do you think it's going to be something else that we need to watch out for and have a different focus on to make sure that it's not exclusive by design?
AI has the ability to move us forward in many ways, but it also has a likelihood of moving us backwards. Right now, we are very well aware of the many issues that we have with AI and misrepresentation of segments when it comes to AI, misunderstanding of segments and the stereotypes that exist and that are being placed in AI models. So that is extremely unfortunate. So we are creating an AI commission that's part of AIM to address these issues right now, because we're still at a point where we're building these models. And if we wait too long, then it's going to be really hard to fix something that is already moved forward in a way that is misrepresentative of the majority of people in this country and in this world.
Absolutely. I think that's for every department. You know, we have the same issue with HR. It could definitely help us get ahead, but it would also help, you know, it will also not help. It will also set us back in a lot of ways if we're not mindful of the stereotypes that it could fall into. So is AIM also educating the members on this?
Definitely. I mean, when we look at the work that we do, I mean, it's about what do those internal composition of a company look like? You know, where is the representation of diverse segments? Does that go all the way to the C-suite and the board, or is that stopping at mid-level management? When we're looking at AI, is how are segments being represented? How are we viewing the opportunities for these segments? And what is the corporate responsibility behind that? Do corporations understand that they have a responsibility as they're building their AI models to be fair and equal to all segments and make sure that folks feel empowered and well-represented when it comes to the AI work that they're doing?
How are some other ways that agencies and brands can remain competitive in a meaningful way in today's market?
I think that, first of all, understanding, testing and understanding the size of the prize. I know that the work that we do at DMI Consulting, you know, with our individual clients, you know, always has to start with a size of the prize model, with an understanding of the work that a company is doing and the direction in which they can meet so that they can understand growth. For us, the work that we do at AIM and at my company is not about the right thing to do, it's about the smart thing to do. So providing people an understanding of the opportunity and the work that needs to be done to maximize that opportunity is key. When executives understand that the growth that is available to them can only be maximized by greater inclusion, then they get excited about moving forward. When you talk about the good thing to do and you talk about having to do this because it's forced upon it, then we do see that resistance that, you know, we are seeing in the marketplace. So as we see resistance, what we know is that corporations that understand the opportunity to move forward, corporations that are committed to every segment because they understand that by including each, they're including all, and that's how they're going to move their agenda and their growth forward. Those are the companies that we see, because for every one individual or a consumer who stands against a company that is inclusive, there are up to 8 consumers who are going to stand with it for the same reason. So the opportunity for growth for because of inclusion is so much bigger than the opportunity for companies to grow when they're stepping away from it and fearful of the repercussions because a loud but, you know, well-organized minority of persons right now are pushing them back and saying, you should not be inclusive, you should not focus on DEI, you should not prioritize DEI, or you should not prioritize diverse marketing.
Is that where the hesitation and resistance is coming from? You alluded to it earlier that people, you know, some companies are hesitant to move forward with this. Why is that? I mean, it's 2024. It just feels like a no-brainer to me, but why are you seeing resistance from the market?
There has been a small but very loud minority of people that have put a lot of pressure on companies, and those companies have given in many cases to that pressure, which is very unfortunate. The research that we've done through CIM and the Culture Inclusion Accelerator proves to us that that minority represents about 10 to 11% of the population only. So when you think about who it is that's pushing back, it's only a very, very small number of people who are pushing back. Yeah, they're well organized and they've had an impact. But what we don't want to see is companies continuing to be fearful of being targeted by that group and hence minimizing their DEI or minimizing their inclusive efforts, because what they need to understand is that the opportunity for them to grow because they're stepping forward and not backward is much bigger and much greater than if they give in to those pressures.
Thank you for explaining that. Looking ahead, where do you see the greatest opportunities for innovation as it relates to inclusive and multicultural marketing?
Culture is number one. Data that we've done, we did an MMM study at the ad level, which meant that working with corporations that were able to test individual ads and understand the power of culture in that ad when it's present and when it's not, showed us that culture is responsible for anywhere between 55 and 66% of a campaign success, which means that if a company gets culture right, they're already more likely than not to win with consumers. Not including culture and placing diverse faces on a campaign without those cultural insights doesn't do the trick. And excluding segments from campaigns does not do the trick. Right now, over 67% of consumers today feel that they're not well represented in ads. So even though we know that culture is responsible for such a big part of campaign success, we're not getting it right. We're not getting it right within programs, and we're not getting it right in ads. So understanding how to get culture right, testing through CIM, is going to be really, really important as we move forward, because it's going to tell customers that you care about them, that you value them, their communities and their cultures. And those same customers are going to feel that their values are aligned with those companies and be that much more likely to support them on a long-term basis.
And what's one piece of advice you'd give to senior leadership in these industries who have maybe not made cultural relevance their priority? Is there a statistic or something that you could share with them to let them know that they're falling behind and maybe how they could take action?
Yes. I mean, again, as I mentioned, that the likelihood that they are going to lose those segments as consumers. And what we know is that through the research that we did, that when consumers do not feel included, when they feel ill-represented, when they feel a company is stepping away from them and their communities, they are going to, the vast majority, nearly 75% of them are going to step away from them and either look for a new brand to support. So they might stay for that company for a little while until they find a new brand, or immediately leave that brand and say, we're not aligned and I'm going to stop purchasing your products or your brand. And the likelihood that they go back to that same brand is very, very low. They're missing out on the opportunity to not only grow on a long term, but to also know that when you lose a customer, you very much likely lost that customer for life. And you're in essence giving that customer away to your competitors by not including them in the right way, by not being culturally sensitive, and by ensuring that you don't step away from them and their culture. And when you think about every segment, sometimes we think about, for example, the LGBTQ segment, which is, folks might see, well, that's anywhere between 7 to 20% of a segment, depending on the age and the research. But the truth of the matter is that when you count allies as part of that LGBTQ segment, and allies feel very strongly about having those shared values with brands, that's over 50% of the population. So it's important to note that we shouldn't only think about brands of targeting segments and saying, I'm going to stick with this segment because it represents 20% of the U.S. population or 10% of the U.S. population. The majority of segments want to see all segments well represented. And if they see somebody stereotyped or ill-represented, they're also likely to step away, even if that's not their segment.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's a really good point on the allyship that comes with these underrepresented groups as well. So you're not just missing out on that audience, but you're also missing out on the allyship that comes with it. And it's very interesting that once a consumer leaves a brand, it's really unlikely that they will go back to them. Why is that?
Because there are choices out there, right? There are choices for people to make. And right now, values are very important to consumers. Having shared values with a company are many times more important than the products themselves. So if a consumer doesn't feel that they have of values that are aligned with theirs, they're going to find another company that shares those values. And what's interesting is that the younger the consumer, the more likely they are to place an emphasis on those values. So as you think about growth and trajectory of a company on the long term, prioritizing those younger consumers that have a longer life value, right? Lifetime value with that brand is very important, because they're going to, in likelihood, live a lot longer. And if you get it right, you have the ability to have a consumer whose life is part of your trajectory and your journey, or losing that consumer for life because they found another brand that has shared values.
Thank you so much for all of your insights. How can someone who's listening to this that wants to take action engage with you so that you could help them drive meaningful change within their organization?
At the industry level, definitely becoming a member of AIM is of tremendous value, not only because of the learnings that are involved in it, but because you don't necessarily feel that you're in a silo. You have like-minded individuals who are going to share your challenges, the opportunities, and make sure that journey is one that we all take part in and move the industry forward. If it comes to individual executives at companies that want to make sure that they're getting it right, we are, you know, DMI Consulting, we've been doing this for 15 years, helping companies get it right, helping companies prioritize diverse segments, prioritize their strategies, and make sure that their general market efforts are in line with those individual efforts to target each and target all.
Thank you so much, Lisette.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for the opportunity and for the inclusion.